Welcome to the Film Rescue Show. I am your pitch master general, Seth. I'm joined by our host, Jesse.
Hello.
And Aaron.
Hello.
First question right out the gate. If you had a power based on an animal, which one would you pick?
I mean, I think I would. I really am into flight. So. I would probably choose like a bat or something like that because I am nocturnal by nature. And so
that
like
makes sense.
Bat, echolocation, flying. I'm kind of into that.
Yeah. The reason I'm asking is because we're doing a little mix up.
Mine.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry about that. Go.
Dung beetle, so I can just throw my shit at people.
You'd also like proportionately be incredibly strong.
Yes. Fair. Yes.
That'd be awesome.
That's a bonus.
We are today discussing Project Power in my rebranding attempt to at least sometimes talk about decent to good movies on Film Rescue.
Yes. This movie isn't terrible. It's okay.
Thank you. My mental health really appreciates it.
Now, that's not to say that we won't get to requests as they come in, but this will at least allow us to pad them out so we don't get, you know, four stinkers back to back. That just, it feels like a waste of a month at that point.
I will say that I do think this needs to be the last, like, superhero thing we do for a little while because we've done, like, three of these back to back. I think we need to take a break from this genre for a little while.
Yeah, I think the only other superhero thing we have planned is they're going to finally make me watch Spider-Man 3 at the end of the season. Boy, that's going to be fun.
Good luck.
Have fun with that.
So overall, I picked this one because when it popped up on Netflix, I was exactly the kind of person that they wanted to market this to because of the people involved in the background production of this movie, like Casey Neistat and Machine Gun Kelly and Jamie Foxx and his production company. I follow all of them online, so I was inundated with ads for this thing.
Yeah, yes. I will say the trailers for this thing were fantastic.
They were?
Yeah. And yeah, then the movie kind of came out, and I overall really liked it. It was harder and darker, like the DC stuff, where it can kind of be bloody and gory when it needs to be, but it was still really fun and, you know, a good tete-a-tete around with the different characters that, I mean, if you're going to like the movie for anything, you're going to like it for the characters, right? I mean,
it has a lot of heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I had to pick a standout, that's what it would be for me. Definitely the, I mean, because this is a really cool cast. I'm not saying that it was perfectly utilized, but really cool cast. What were you guys' first impressions?
So I think my first impression is that the real MVP of this film is the bath towel that stayed on Joseph Gordon-Levitt's butt as he ran after the van.
Yes.
Because I was just waiting for that to fall off for obvious reasons, and it did not. And I'm like, good job. Good job, wardrobe. But no, on a serious note, this is one of those films that the concept is really fascinating to me. The mechanics of the pill are great because it's long enough for a real-time scene where something happens, but short enough for a real-time scene where you don't get the bored out of yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And you could go boom, or you could go, like, badass. Like, you don't get to choose, you don't know, it just happens. So there are so many implications, and what I like about that is you've got two rules that very quickly can be established with the audience that anyone can understand the cost benefit ratio of this,
right?
And but there's so many interesting possibilities of what you can do with it.
The rules are laid out pretty well, is what I can say. Yeah, that's the thing. That's the first guy, the fire guy, the real Human Torch.
Yes.
Yeah. He takes three pills at one time and then he explodes. Like, yeah, you shouldn't have done that.
Not his best life decision.
Yeah.
Not at all.
This reminded me a lot of an unfinished comic from Mark Millar called War Heroes, where it was from 2008, I believe. It never got finished because Mark Millar is absolutely lazy. And so basically the idea was that military personnel, like soldiers on the front lines of the war in Afghanistan, would be given these pills that would give them superpowers for a short period of time in order to help them fight against the war on terror. Clever premise, not the best execution. But it never got finished because Mark Millar is very lazy, and he has admitted that he only makes comics at this point basically to sell as films and TV shows.
Yeah.
Do we need to put in allegedly here, or did he actually say that?
He has said that he basically just does that for... He has said that.
Just want to make sure.
Like, every time a film, or every time, like, a new comic comes out, it's like, oh, movie or TV deal is already in development. Like, he's already got stuff in development for, like, a bunch of other shows, like Jupiter's Legacy is being made right now.
What is that like? What is it like to just print money with your pen, or pencil, or digital typing thingy?
I'm sure he sleeps on a bed of $100 bills.
Right.
I would sleep so well.
Yeah, but, you know, money can buy you everything. This movie reminded me a lot of that, where it's like this clever idea. It also reminded me a little bit of another comic I read called Black, where basically only black people in America have superpowers.
Mm. Yep, I read that one.
Yeah, it's genuinely good. It's really, really well done. I think it was only like 6 or 8 issues. It wasn't very long. But it's good series, well done, and this kind of reminds me of a lot of that, and this is taking inspiration from actual real-world events.
Yeah.
What's that gif that we always see? I know writers that use subtext, and they're all cowards.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, for those who don't know, the United States government, the CIA, they trafficked heroin and crack cocaine into lower income areas of major metropolitan cities into the projects in order to basically get the lower class addicted.
People.
Yeah, black people generally, black, Hispanic, Asian. Could you get them addicted to drugs to get them imprisoned to increase the population of prisons to corporatize and privatize the prison system and basically remove any kind of non-white individual from society? They did
this. It's slavery with extra steps.
It's slavery with extra steps, yeah.
Is why Baltimore cuts funding to schools and pumps funding into prisons, because prisons make money and schools don't.
Yeah. Your tax dollars at work.
And even like 30 years before that, when they were giving syphilis to black men in the South.
Yeah.
Just, you know, that's our government for
you.
Yeah.
Or the Native American... what was it? The sterilization programs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a thing. And we did that not too long ago with what happened on the Mexican border.
Mm.
Yeah, very recently.
Your government really doesn't care about you.
Nope.
Anyways. In connection with this film, it is using this idea of using superhuman abilities and superpowers as a metaphor for drug use and addiction. I get it. The metaphor isn't completely accurate. There's questionable elements, you know. So it's, why is it that some people get invisibility while others get fire abilities? Some people get like hardened skin. You know,
yeah.
I don't really see that being a downside.
I wanted to pick apart that aspect of it, especially when we get into the fix section, because that was the only thing that was like screaming at me in the back of my brain while watching it was, well, you wouldn't get like the powers of an animal from within yourself. That's not how DNA works. We don't like,
yeah.
not exactly the same thing. So either...
Listen, 2012 Tumblr says differently, Mr.
Oh, because the internet never lies.
I'm an other kin.
Yeah, the other kin. Hey, if you feel it on a spiritual level, that's I can't disprove you. I can Fair. Prove that we don't have pistol shrimp DNA in us.
Damn it.
And that's not to
what
say
if
that
we're
like
Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Cinnamon. Oh, I love it. Yeah. So that was like the one aspect that I didn't quite make sense, because either it's explainable by saying there's something in the pill that like has the DNA and then the bonding agent that makes it work with humans, but only certain humans. Like I could get behind that. That's fine.
Or maybe it bonds with the burrito that you ate while like the chicken in your burrito, and now you're going balk balk.
Hey, that would be also funny.
Something. It's something. It's more than we got.
But from what I gathered, the reason that the pill exist is because they were testing a previous form of it on Jamie Foxx back in the day, and then when he had a kid, his DNA was so shifted that she got powers without the pills.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit, semen,
it reminds me a bit of The Boys, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a little bit of The Boys in here, a little bit of, you know, of some other comic book series as well. Like,
wasn't there a
there are
Captain America spinoff where him where he had kids that had super serum related powers?
I don't remember that at all.
I don't know. I'm that might just be a fantasy of mine.
I don't think that exists. I don't think he has kids.
The one-to-one comparison here is obviously the X-Men, right? Like a gene is being awoken within a subset of society. I very quickly can get on board with all of this. The visuals and the powers were very well realized as what they're going to look like on screen. And you can tell that, like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is tough, but he's not, like, super strong, whereas the big bearded guy is, like, incredibly strong.
Yeah.
But definitely not bulletproof.
Yeah. Also, I think that guy with the beard is the guy with the long beard from the first John Wick.
Yep.
The guy
in the
nightclub that gets pulled down to the table by his beard and then shot in the head twice.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that was the same guy.
He is forever typecast as henchman in action movies.
He's bearded henchman.
Yep.
Well, at least you cornered the market.
Right. He's huge. Also, wasn't he in The Equalizer as well?
Never seen in The Equalizer.
It's pretty good.
Isn't there a sequel?
The sequel was also pretty good.
Okay. I'll add him to my watch list.
Yeah, I wouldn't give up time or I wouldn't put him like high on the list or anything, but they're pretty good for it's exactly the kind of action movie that you want. You know what I mean?
I've heard that they're called dad movies.
100% dad movies.
They are dad movies.
Denzel Washington reads books and kicks ass.
Fair enough.
Other positives. I really dig the score for this movie. Mm-hmm. It reminded me a lot of Annihilation. That this new like sci-fi synth redux that is happening feels straight out of the 80s. I love it.
It's Joseph Trapanese, who also did the score for the first Raid movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah,
I love the score.
Yeah, like he actually, you know, has a style to him. It's interesting. It's unique. I don't think he did the second one. I can't remember. Maybe he did. He's got a great style to him. Another thing I really like is visually this movie looks really good.
Oh, it's so sharp.
It's colorful. It's got great look. It's got great style to it. If the DC movies look more like this, I would be totally on board with it.
Yeah.
They really had fun with the cinematography, which is like one of my big complaints with a lot of the Marvel films and stuff like that. Like, have fun with the cinematography. Fucking put the camera in the ceiling. Put it in the oven. Fuck. Just put it someplace interesting for fucking once.
No. Audience is dumb. Have to just have standard shot, reverse shot.
And even when the shot doesn't fully work, like what the oneer from the inside of the tank when the girl is freezing during the action sequence, it doesn't totally work, but hey, at least they tried something.
Yeah, basically you see the fight scene outside the tank while she's inside freezing to death. It's an interesting idea. Problem is, I can't really see the fight scene.
Right.
That's the problem. A nice idea, but not great execution.
Yeah. Not the best way to utilize your budget in that instance.
Right. Casey Neistat showed up for the day.
By the way, the budget for this was $85.1 million.
Yeah.
You do see a lot of it on screen.
Yeah.
The movie we're discussing the other day was $85 million. Yeah, 85,000. That would be impressive.
Dude, if somebody did this movie for $85,000, I would shit a brick.
I really liked, speaking about positives, I don't want to forget to say how much I liked Robin.
Oh, yeah.
you can absolutely tell that it's a white dude writing her. However, she's a young character with a lot of skills, but they're really plausible considering the kind of life that she lives. Like, I do wish that they would have shown her mother working at the vet rather than saying, oh, my mom works at the vet, because that would have been more effective. But, like, oh, like, she's learned some things about, like, stitching up from her mom. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I can see her mom doing that. You know, she's been, you know, pushing drugs because she's been trying to save her mother's life because her mother has diabetes and the medication is expensive. The insulin's expensive. Like,
yeah.
There's tons of kids that have that real life lived experience. Go up fucking 15 minutes up the road in Baltimore and you can find 20 kids on the street that are living that experience with no problem.
Mm.
So she is a very realistic character that I feel helps to ground a film that has a lot of supernatural elements and a lot of characters that aren't as realistic or that are a little less realistic because they have these superpowers.
Her chemistry with JGL was also just so off the charts. They're mm-hmm. so funny together.
And I was so afraid they were going to do creepy and make it romantic because they do that in so many action films. Mm. They were good. The whole movie.
Yeah,
it
absolutely.
It was never once inappropriate for the fact that he's an adult and she's in high school.
Right. I do wish they would have developed that aspect of the story a little bit more. Like, the fact that he's essentially a dirty cop. He's buying drugs from a teenager in the city that he, you know, two scenes before was screaming about wanting to protect.
Well, he's getting these powers because the police force won't authorize them, and he's getting them to take down the superpowered people because the normal police force can't do it. Because one thing that the film kind of brushes over, this is kind of a negative, the police force is apparently bought by this corporate entity that is never really laid out very clearly how involved they are.
It's brought up too late in the plot, too. I think it needed to happen earlier in the plot in order for it to be plausible. It was kind of like they realized, oh, shit, this doesn't make sense. We just need to throw into, oh, yeah, the cops, they've been bribed all along. That's why they haven't been doing anything.
Yeah. Right.
It reminds me of like after the fact.
It reminds me of like a Batman story where there's like one good cop and Batman and everybody else is corrupt.
Yeah,
exactly.
Are you telling me the entire police force is bought and paid for? That's really fucking convenient.
That's expensive.
Right. And also, they're not doing a lot with it either.
Yeah, like
for having been bought and paid for.
Apparently, crime is everywhere, and no one's stopping it. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I have been to Louisiana. Some crazy stuff happens down there.
I have no intentions of ever visiting.
I did see a guy walking his pet alligator while I was there. That was a real thing.
Not surprised. Seems pretty typical.
I saw the same thing in Florida, though, so I think that's just like a... like
That's
know,
just Tuesday in Florida.
Yeah, that's a thing. It's a thing down south.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay. Moving on. there's a lot more positive than negative to this, but I think some of the implications, Aaron, you were saying this before we started, some of the implications of this are not explored at all, and mm-mm. I definitely think that's to keep the story on track.
Yeah.
However,
this is actually something that could be an interesting universe. Like,
oh yeah,
I could see good sequels coming out of this because you've got great characters that ended off in a good place to have a sequel follow up. And there's so many things that you can do with these pills that, you know, there's a lot of different angles you can explore with this.
I think this was clearly meant to start a franchise. Like, why would you put $85 million into a movie and have it just be a one-off?
Yeah.
Like, this clearly was meant to start a franchise, but I think because COVID really screwed them, I don't think that's moving forward, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, because I would watch more stories in this setting. However, I guess my worry would be that it would turn into kind of, like, Law and Order with superpowers, and that's really not what I would want to see.
Yeah, that's fair. But I really like that they're finally, like, even though it kind of felt like they were giving Joseph Gordon-Levitt second billing on this, it really felt like he was the lead, because he was definitely doing the backbreaking work of carrying this story, because Some of the dialogue is pretty weak, and I'm sure we'll get into that in the negatives. But it would have been really good to see a series of films with him as a lead or a co-lead, because I just feel like because he was a child actor and he's got that baby face, and because he's like a smaller guy, they don't necessarily give him the respect that he's due. And he's a good actor. Like, yeah, he's got some really great scenes in this. And oh my gosh, the fucking what's it gonna be punk scene.
But the standout for me was when he bust into Robin's house to protect her mom from the two agents.
Yes,
and just,
god, that was fucking hot. The way he lives
the whole thing. Yeah.
Oh my god, a scruffy, introspective man who can just improvise on his feet, like, seriously, sign me up.
he kept rolling with it. It was so funny.
It was so good.
Yeah, great execution there. Overall, I definitely would, like, recommend checking it out if you're into the superhero genre, because it is...
If you need a change of pace for Marvel and DC, this will do it for you.
100%, yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think was the best displayed power on screen?
Ooh, I don't know. The pistol shrimp is pretty hard to compare with.
I mean, the ending is pretty cool, where he has the solar flares.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I really like
there's no flight in this movie.
No.
That's a shame.
Which I think is a good move, because I think when you take your stuff into the air under the water, it gets really dicey on the realism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and no animals levitate. Everyone would have to grow some kind of, like, wing structure to be able to fly.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Ooh, now somebody growing, like, stretchy skin between their arms and legs so they could do, like, a flying...
flying squirrel.
It'd be gross to see, but it would look awesome.
Oh my god, let Cronenberg direct one of these fuckers? Sign me the hell up.
They tried this with the Fan 4 stick, Aaron.
the middle part of the movie, the only good part.
The only good part of the movie, yeah, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, fair.
Because there was some Cronenberg-y stuff in here, too. Like, Machine Gun Kelly, when he answers the door and his face is all, like, fucked up because he's, I guess, not controlling his powers, or...
Mm-hmm. Or it has side effects and it ruins you, it burns you.
Yeah.
Because his power apparently is that he catches on fire. So,
because his character was Newt, and later Major says that Newt overdosed.
Right. Right. Yeah. But before that, when he answers the door, it seems like he's already activated his power before, and now he's burned. So either when it turned off, the fire didn't go away, so it hurt him. It's not, you know, clear, but I like those little world-building things where it's like, yeah, if you're not aware of what your powers are and making plans for them, you could really get fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's clever ideas in this story. There's good stuff and it looks good. It's just there's just some problems with character and story that kind of drag it down.
Because you know what I was just thinking was what I was thinking when with JGL's character, what the fuck is his name?
Frank.
Oh my god. It's such a not fitting name for him. Anyway, I was thinking with Frank that it would be interesting if the police realized selectively that some officers had guaranteed always good powers from it and then forced those officers to use the pill. That's a really interesting angle that they could have taken it. And instead they're like, you know, this isn't technically against the rules. And yeah, it technically did save your life. And like, there's no real like good reason for this yet. But you know what? You're fired anyway.
One final positive that I had was anytime they tried to bench Robin, she would just immediately go do her own thing and then advance the story. Like, she was the only one moving the story along. Every time they're like, no, you go stand over there. It's like, nope, I'm going to re-enter the story and advance it for you real quick. I really enjoyed that.
Much like U.S. politics, nothing the fuck changes until a black woman does something.
So let's dip our toes in the negatives for a little bit. When drug dealer man hulks out in the basement, it lost me for a second. I'm not gonna lie. It looked a little cheesy.
It was too far.
It's a little bit too much for the budget of the film.
Yeah. like laws of thermodynamics, he doesn't have enough mass to grow like that without consuming stuff. So I'm not sure exactly what was going on there.
They wanted a Hulk moment, that's all.
Yeah, they wanted it to feel more superhero-y, and that's where I was like, eh, I can leave that. That wasn't helpful for me.
Yeah.
Especially if his power had been something like, you know, gorilla or, you know, something like that. Or, and what about the poor people that have, like, you know, they get, like, the powers of extra skin like a hound dog, and they just... That's it. They just kind of flop around.
There was a there was another comic book series by J. Michael Straczynski of Babylon 5 fame. It was a book called Rising Stars. And it, basically, like, this flash of light happens over this random town, and I think it's like 1,000 people get superpowers, but some of them range from like superhuman abilities like flight and pyromancy and shit like that. Other people get like telekinesis, but she can only lift things like as heavy as a leaf. So it's
boring.
Or a leaf or a
pen.
That
would be me. But I always get dicked on stuff like that.
But here's the thing that they do. It gets creative in that, think of the small things you could move. Like somebody's carotid artery in their heart. You'd make somebody have a heart attack and no one would know. So the CIA hired that person as an assassin.
Love
interesting.
That idea.
Clever twists upon those, you know, useless powers.
Yeah. There's a manga and anime series, My Hero Academia, and the key idea is that 80% of the world has superpowers. However, only like 10% of that is useful powers. Otherwise, you might just look like a dog-headed person, and that there's no power. You just look like that.
That's a pisser.
Yeah. It leads to great story moments when you have, you know, the jealousy of the minority of like normal people or people who have dumb powers being really upset when these heroes with giant powers use them to, you know, destroy cities while trying to stop bad guys. That's like a whole arc in this where they want the heroes to be responsible for that kind of stuff, because it's like, hey, we got dicked on our powers, so you guys have to do better.
Yeah.
Well, how about you guys? What were some negative elements that stood out to you?
Jamie Foxx's character is very unlikable.
They really try hard to do that whole shift where it's like, oh, wait, he's doing bad things for a good reason. Now you like him. And it's like, but we need a little bit more from the actual personality department to like him.
Well, also, like, all the bad stuff that he does in the first half of the movie, when he gets to the reason why he's doing it, and then the second half of the movie continues. Like, the whole time I'm just asking, well, why didn't he just ask? Why did you have to kidnap Robin? You could just ask.
And he really went hard at the kidnapping. And you can, at first I was like, well, okay, maybe he doesn't realize she's a kid. And maybe it's going to come up later that she's a kid and that's going to be a thing. And he's going to feel
bad. It felt
bad,
like
and
Men on Fire.
But we find out later that he knows a lot about her. That he knows she's a kid. And it's like, it's hard to redeem somebody that kidnaps a child violently, a child who he knows has a shit home life.
And then threatens to kill her sickly mother. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's literally a scene from Men on Fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, the scene where he shoves the C4 up the guy's ass.
Right.
It's the same scene. Just there's no C4 in the ass.
Right.
Yeah. Like, why wouldn't you just be like, hey, you seem like a reasonable kid. My daughter is your age. Like, imagine being in her situation. And then she'll be like, yeah, I don't have anything to gain from this, but I'm going to help you because I would want somebody to help me. Okay, the plot works, and it's a million times better.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest part of my fix is to his character, because I think there's a way to use the idea that they were going for and make it functional to the plot.
Yeah.
I think that is important, because I like Man on Fire Jamie Foxx. You know, I prefer charismatic Jamie Foxx. There's a reason Django Unchained works so fucking well. But yeah, that aspect of it just, it feels like the movie kind of spins its tires for 20 minutes, just reaffirming to us that he's definitely a bad guy, only for it to the twist, if you want to call it that, very loose air quotes, is that he's not actually a bad guy.
Yeah.
And we only think that because of Frank getting the picture from his boss, and then them literally pointing to his picture and saying, he's the one that's supplying power, when we know from the opening of the movie, he's not.
Yeah. Like, so there's really no drama, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Also, he has no connective tissue with Frank either. Like, they just the reason they end up teaming up is because Frank arrests him. And then I thought his power was going to end up being that he can tell the future, because he guesses that his boss is going to text him in 30 seconds and tell him to change locations. And I was like, is he seeing the future? Because it happens, but he was just really good at guessing.
That would be a very useful power.
Oh, 100%.
I can see into the future about 20 seconds in the future. That'd be super useful.
Yeah.
Because then you could just, like, change small things and it would make your day so much better.
There's a book called Blink about a character who basically develops that ability. He pushes it out by the end of the book by going on a peyote trip and figuring out that if he, like, microdoses, the effects last longer. So he goes from, like, being able to see a minute into the future and doing, like, you know that scene in Bourne Ultimatum where Bourne directs the guy through the crowd?
Right, yeah.
He does that, but, you know, without anybody directing him, he's able to avoid all the cops in an airport, and he eventually pushes the power way, way out so he can see the what's going to happen, like, hours into the future. Mm. It's an okay book. It's not anything super unique, but yeah, the idea behind that power, because isn't that, like, one of the things from Spider-Man? Some spiders have precognition or close to it.
Sort of a spider sense is what they're getting after. I don't know if that's a real thing. I don't know.
I mean, it can be real for this movie.
I mean, there's that movie Next with Nicolas Cage.
Oh God!
You can see 2 minutes into the future.
The movie where the second half of the movie doesn't matter.
Yeah, all that matters is the last 30 seconds. So
stupid. Oh, man, that movie's bad. No, we won't fix it.
No, we won't. Because it's only half a movie.
It's bad Nick Cage. That's the worst kind of Nick Cage to watch.
Yeah, bad Nick Cage is not acceptable here on Film Rescue.
Good bad is what we want.
Yes.
Or good, actually, for that matter.
Yeah, either or.
Aaron, how about you? Anything that didn't work in the movie for you?
There was a whole lot of red lights just in general, and there were, I don't know if they were trying to hide blood in some scenes to make some scenes more, like, palatable for younger audiences, because I don't think they would go in against any rating boards. I don't know. I don't know. It felt really red in a lot of places, a lot of red lightings. I felt like there was way too much exposition that was being done by either on the cue, like on the nose musical cues, like by a radio playing or something like that, or just by them having a conversation. Like, show us, like, especially when it's something that you could really easily show me that. Don't tell me.
Yeah.
You know what this reminded me of, and in the worst way possible?
What?
What the fuck was that Will Smith orc movie? Bright.
Oh, Bright.
Remind me a little bit of that. Also a Netflix film. It reminded me a little bit of that, although this has done much, much better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, we said that this is basically a B movie. This is a B film. Like, this is not A tier stuff. It's got A tier actors in it, but it's a B quality film. Mm. Netflix has kind of cornered the market on that.
Yeah.
Like, if it's just above Redbox quality, it goes to Netflix. And if it's just above that, it goes to Amazon.
Yeah. Too good for Redbox.
And I mean, I think because I went into it expecting a Netflix quality movie, that I had a much more pleasurable experience than if I wouldn't have known that. Mm. And I do try to, when we think about these movies, I try to think about them from both angles. Like, A, if this is a Netflix thing, is it good for Netflix quality, or is it good for quality? But then also, what would it look like on its own? If nobody told me where this film came from, what would I think of it if I didn't have that? I think I would have liked it less if I didn't know that it was a Netflix original, you know?
Well, it's filmed like a TV show, like lots of close-ups, lots of like standard two shots. Like there's very rarely ever a lot of wides. It's filmed like a TV film, but it's still got some good moments in it. I mean, the money is clearly on screen. Like, there's some good cinematography occasionally. There's some good lighting. There's great visual effects. Visual effects, I will say, are top notch.
They're pretty good, yeah.
It's up for some awards for those, actually, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely got a lot of quality on that. It's just the script and the character development are the things. And also, I would say the pacing, because the film is almost 2 hours long. It really could have been trimmed down to like an hour and a half to an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's way too long.
It is lopsided for sure.
Yeah, it feels like it kind of it slugs its way through the first half, and then it finally picks up steam in the second half.
Mm.
So it's got some pacing problems, but overall it's not bad. It's got problems, but it's not bad. It's a B movie.
The transformation scenes are really cool, but all of them feel a little bit too long, and they should have definitely been getting shorter and shorter as the movie progressed, but it didn't feel like they were getting shorter.
Yeah, yeah. We get what this is now. We don't have to watch the entire sequence over and over.
Yeah,
yeah, understand. Like, yes, you can do visual effects. That's pretty fucking baller, but get back to the point.
Yeah, you can tell that the whole thing's a little bit lopsided in the fact that the naked bank robber, the invisible man, that whole sequence is only there to A, have a cool looking visual effect, and then B, get Frank in trouble with his boss to get him kicked off the case. It's superfluous bank robbery, which like
it
feels like
basically nothing else.
Right. And again, like I think the sequence is hilarious because the guy has to strip fucking naked for it to use his power.
That's another thing is it actually is accurate to how you actually have to be invisible. It's like, well, I can turn invisible. Well, your clothes don't turn invisible.
Right.
It's accurate in that regard.
They have put a decent amount of thought into it.
Yeah, yeah, that and any other movie or any lesser movie, I'll put it that way, that usually gets played off as like a sexy thing by having the woman be invisible. I love that it was a dude this time. So it was just like his balls are slapping around as he's running through New Orleans.
Also, it's accurate in that people don't realize that if you were to become invisible, you'd also be blind.
Yep.
How's that?
Because there's no light hitting your corneas.
That makes
sense.
So they
make him not invisible, they make him translucent. He sort of like camouflages himself.
Yeah.
So like the invisible man has problems in that, oh, well, why is he able to see where he's going?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
And the chameleons can't actually be invisible in real life. I don't like when they do, like, oh, we got this power from a chameleon. I can go invisible. Like, chameleons can't do that.
Right.
I like that they actually did keep things kind of restricted and true for the most part.
Especially when you have things like octopuses that can not only change their colors, but their shape as well. They can... Mm-hmm. You know, literally like manipulate their shape to look like other things, smooth or rough. Or I've seen some of them that can make themselves look like they have like leaves on them. That's crazier to me.
Octopus girlfriend.
What?
Octopus girlfriend. I'm just saying. There's a lot of benefits.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. I follow what you're saying now.
You can get multiple reach arounds.
So many benefits.
I think another big issue for me is there's like the baton of villain is passed across this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who's the main villain of this movie?
See, I would assume
the pacing.
Yeah.
True. I would assume it's the lady that's running Genesis, but it was definitely the guy that hulks out in the middle of the movie. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, it's Jamie Foxx. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess it's trying to say, like, with basically the idea is that this is it a private company? What is it?
Hey, great question.
Okay, maybe
nobody
there's some
knows. problems.
Maybe there's some development that has problems here. What's the name of the company? What's the name of it?
So the
Genesis?
No, that's the name of the boat.
Genesis is the name of the boat. They don't name the company.
No, they did. They did.
I don't. I mean, they named the thing Project Power, but that's just the development of the pills.
Hang on, let me look it up.
Oh, Telios. But
Telios, that's it.
But yeah. That's
The name of the company. The name of the company is Telios, but they, I think they are in league with the police and the U.S. government. I guess
it seems like it. Yeah.
So they're trying to make a statement that you don't know how high the ladder goes. But the problem is, it doesn't work for a story.
Yeah, because the way it should have been is they should have got to the boat and found out that this is a CIA project. Just do the metaphor one-to-one. They're the ones running the show behind the curtain.
Yeah, it's MK Ultra or something like that.
Exactly.
So something that we can relate to.
Right. Yeah, because they're selling to foreign governments. But not in any way that they're controlling them, besides, I guess, the supply, and to what end? It sounds like just profit. So, it's just kind of nebulous. Corporation is nebulous, and I hate that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a comment on the U.S. military or U.S. government selling weapons to foreign nations to then go blow the shit out of them like 10 years later.
Right, yeah. Right.
We sell off our unused bombs that don't work anymore to a country that needs armaments, and then we just go and blow the shit out of them later on because we know that we armed them, so they're not a threat.
It felt like the film was definitely trying to wedge in just way too many socio-political elements.
Absolutely.
Like, I appreciate all that stuff, but holy fuck, were there a lot.
Well, because there's good lines in it where Frank says, you know, the last time we trusted men in suits, you remember what happened, referencing Hurricane Katrina. And so, like, okay, cool, that's good world building. That's setting this in a great way. Yeah. But those G-men end up not leading to anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just kind of vanish. another problem is that, I don't know if this is a problem, but it's supposed to be set in New Orleans, in Louisiana. It just looks like a random neighborhood. It doesn't feel like a Louisiana film. You know what I mean?
The times where it does, it really does. Like when she's leaving the church's chicken and she asks the lady if she saw who blew out her tire. That's like, that was straight up just some extra from Louisiana. That's where it really screams it's Louisiana. But then, yeah, like you're saying, the other stuff, like what was that, the location where they have the meeting next to the Superdome, was it a bank? Was it a check cashing place? Was it a club? Was like, I'm
a random building that's been redone by production design.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like nothing set in the French Quarter. Nothing is set in a notable landmark. It just feels like nondescript buildings, and we're calling it Louisiana.
Specifically New Orleans. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've played Left 4 Dead 2. I know what that shit looks like.
Haven't you been to Louisiana? Why would you reference that first?
Well, I mean, you know, because I love Left 4 Dead, and I'm very...
Solid. You know, speaking of scenes that could have been cut, so there's that scene that honestly reminded me out of something from the That Happened subreddit, where Robin is shamed by the teacher, and she, like, retorts with this epic rap, and then, like, some other kid's recording it, and all the other kids are like, "Woo!" And it, like, seemingly just exists to show that her character can rap early in the movie because somebody realized later on, like, whoa, like, later on in the movie she needs to rap, so, like, maybe we need to establish this earlier. And I just feel like that whole scene, it was awkward. It reminded me of, like, too many bullying instances when I was a kid and didn't really need to exist in a movie that already was a little bit too long.
Yeah, it was like a ham-fisting of the rules of three because we are introduced to her rapping.
Yep.
That's like how we meet the character, so I definitely know that about her.
Oh, yeah, I completely forgot about that. Yeah, so we don't even need this.
Yeah, and then she raps for art, or, you know, the major in the veterinary spot, They just wanted to complete the rule of threes, I think. And that the only other thing that comes out of that scene is establishing that she knows what fetal alcohol syndrome is, which I guess if you want to say that's how Tracy got her powers, sure. I'm going to say not quite the same thing, but okay.
Yeah. No, because having powers of healing is a little bit different from having fetal alcohol syndrome.
Yeah.
It's significantly different.
Like I said, the metaphor doesn't quite ring true. Like, well, why does getting superpowers equate to being addicted to crack cocaine?
It was very yikesy too. It was just like, why do you have to associate it with something negative? Because can you please make it something even neutral?
Yeah,
it's a B movie. It's not meant to be taken that seriously. Yeah. It's very. I think I was thinking it's the kind of film that is wide as an ocean but shallow as a puddle.
Very true.
Yeah. So it's not a bad film. It's just got some problems. It's got pacing issues, character development issues. It's a little too long, but overall it's not bad. If you got an afternoon free, yeah, sure, go ahead, throw it on. Like, if you need a break from Marvel and DC, especially after the 4 hours of the Snyder Cut, yeah, go ahead, throw it on. Sure, why not? It's also a good movie you can put on when you have to do other stuff, like your laundry or whatever. It's like, yeah, you can walk away from it for about 5 minutes and come back, and you still kind of know what's going on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The beats are telegraphed at the end of each scene just to make sure they are summed up enough that you knew what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Any final thoughts on the film before we jump over into the pitch?
Nah, I'm good.
I'm good.
Aaron?
I said I'm good, but also Scruffy JGL is just a fucking yeah.
His the blood vessel burst in his eye thing throughout film. That was just like such a great little additive.
Why is that so sexy?
That might be my final positive. Even though one of our heroes is invincible, both of these guys take a fucking beating and look like it by the end of it.
Mm. Yeah. That's how you just display that your characters are fallible. Like we were talking about Raiders of the Lost Ark recently. Like,
yep.
Have these characters get the shit beaten out of them, please. It shows how good they are at coming back.
Right. When Jamie Foxx falls down in front of the chamber after that whole shootout scene, and you can just tell he is wiped out from that exchange, I was like, yes, thank you. He's not invincible Superman man.
Yeah. Yeah. He feels like a real person.
Exactly. Well, I think we are going to take a short break. When we come back, I will be fixing this film. Actually, I have a short fix for a sequel as well, or if you want to just do a page one rewrite, you could call it that too, but I think they work together. Here's a word from one of our friends.
Hey everybody, this is Chris Chipman, aka The Chippa. You may remember me from an episode of the Film Rescue Show where I talked about Serenity. No, not the Joss Whedon one, the really, really, really terrible one with Matthew McConaughey. No, you didn't catch that episode? Oh, whoa, you did catch that episode? Well, either way, come check me out, because you're listening to a podcast. And, you know, when you're listening to a podcast, you really want to listen to other podcasts. You can find me by searching The Chippa Made This anywhere podcasts are found. You will find all of my shows. I do 4 of them. I do the Chipman Brothers Tangent podcast with my brother Movie Bob. I do Creating Geeks, a parenting podcast of great responsibility with my wife. I do the Talkbuster podcast all about the video rental industry. And I do Shooting the Shit with Chippa, which is just my excuse to talk to more people without any real plan or point. The Film Rescue Show's own Seth Decker is the editor on my show This Made the Chippa, which you can find by going to patreon.com/thechippa and supporting me for $2 or more. You'll get access to that, as well as my show Hopped Ones, which is just like the Spicy Wing Challenge show, Hot Ones, but we drink beer. So if you enjoy all of that stuff and just like a happy, positive guy on the internet that also makes podcasts, go and find me, and I'm happy to share all this crap with you guys. Bye.
Welcome back to the show. We're talking about Project Power. I've been calling it Power ever since it came out. I keep forgetting that there's a project at the beginning of that. Is there another movie called Power that I don't know about?
There is a TV show called
Power. TV series.
I think it's Stars.
Well, I honestly think the project is important because I think it's not just project as in, hey, this is a project where we give people power, but also because it takes place in the projects.
Yeah. I know that. Writers that use subtext. All of them are cowards.
Yep. Okay. I follow now. So I'm going to keep many aspects. I'm going to strip out a lot of aspects. My short, quick pitch, though, whether this would be the film proper, if you wanted to start from scratch, or if you wanted to do a sequel and continue the series with, like, maybe Frank coming back. I would do it as a sequel. So let's just say it's a sequel. It's basically I just had the name of it in my head. Keanu Reeves and Gary Busey.
Point Break.
Point Break with power pills.
Okay. I'm all in for that.
How fun would that be?
Yes.
And so, you know, JGL's got to join the team, and he's the bulletproof guy, so he's going to be, like, front of the line when they're doing their heists, and, you know, you can assign the different powers out. Your opening scene is a skydiving scene where people take a pill as they jump to find out what their power is, and you have, like, one person just fucking explode on the way down. Sets up everything in the first 3 minutes, no problem. You know that everybody gets a different power, and there's a chance you're going to die, and that's it. Like, perfect setup. If you've never seen the first one, you're 100% on board again. To fix this film, however, let's go a little deeper. I really like the idea of not knowing what side Jamie Foxx is on. Yeah. And I think the way to do this is, instead of having him be this kind of vigilante coming in from the outside, I think he should be part of Telios. And he's a double agent, basically trying to collect the power information so that he can protect these kids that are getting powers, kind of moving towards like imagine if Professor X was an Army Ranger kind of thing.
I see. Basically, you're trying to say, like, he wants to just collect it for his own personal uses.
Yeah, yeah. And to protect the kids from this company. Without letting it go worldwide. And the reason he works for Telios is because they have Tracy. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. You know, I'm going to infiltrate and be as close to her as possible to make sure that she's protected, that kind of thing. But he's still working this second angle of, you know, going out and trying to collect this the power information, because I think it's a radio broadcaster within the pill, right? That's how they're collecting the information on people's powers.
It's sort of like tracking data that's sort of relays back to Telios to give them information about, like, who is susceptible to what power and ability and how effective it is, and, you know, how it affects people on a molecular and DNA-based level. It's an interesting idea. It does, unfortunately, does influence a lot of those goddamn conspiracy theorist assholes that think that vaccines give you, you know, microchips.
So that's Jesus. I'm stripping all of that out in lieu of the G-Men. The G-Men show up after somebody takes a pill the first time, and they collect the information, you know, what happened, and then they offer to put these people into protective custody.
Is this just Men in Black crossed with Point Break crossed with X-Men?
Kind of.
I mean, that's not a bad idea.
That's pretty good.
So what happens is Robin's character is going to be generally unchanged. She's just one of the people on the street. Like, if you're going to have people pushing a drug on the street for free, or, you know, a power pill on the street for free, then it wouldn't make sense why you have all this extra technology in the background, especially if you're a startup in the testing phase. This has to be men on the street kind of things.
And why would it be in this location of all places?
Exactly. Well, the reason, I think, for that is because I want it to be, instead of Telios is a front, this is the CIA, and this is a ugly CIA op. They are, like, specifically directing their attention towards the black and impoverished community in New Orleans. And
I know writers that use subtext, and all of them are cowards.
I'm going to double down on the Hurricane Katrina aspect of this. I want there to be some kind of sub-conspiracy that Frank is investigating, that something about Hurricane Katrina is why the people in this area are able to have the powers activate in them. And what I think would be really cool is that after the floods, when all of the water systems were reworked, they added a tracer element into the water that basically acts as the bonding agent for anyone who will get powers. So it's not going to work on everybody, obviously, but the people that it will work on, some people would just take the drug and nothing happens, because obviously it's not going to give everyone powers. I don't think that's how DNA works. I want it to be a little more precise in that, you know, it's like the X-Men. Not everyone has the X gene. The world would be boring if everyone had powers. What does Syndrome say? When everyone's a super, no one is. He's tracking this conspiracy that somebody was adding this tracer element into the water supply, specifically in these neighborhoods, and then they're cross-referencing the power activations with the pill that's been put on the street. So that's kind of the new shift in how all of this is working. You have Jamie Foxx is also like working through this and trying to enact his plan to get Tracy out. He doesn't want to stay here forever. He does want to get her out, but he has to do it, you know, kind of like a Jason Bourne thing where he needs to get out without being caught or everyone thinking he's dead or something like that. So instead of him going through all this kidnapping stuff, he now has an inside role where he's this man on the street and he's actually helping the kids as they discover their powers. The way that you show this is you have Machine Gun Kelly's character, Newt. He has an accident with his powers. That's why his face is like that. When Jamie Foxx shows up, instead of gunning him down for information, or, you know, trying to gun him down, he doesn't quite succeed. There's no OD anymore. I do want him to catch on fire and them have a tussle because Newt doesn't trust him. However, he uses the shower to put him out and show him that, like, if he's wet by the time the power ends, he won't burn anymore. And then he can bring in Newt to have his daughter Tracy heal him. And now Newt can actually be a character within the story and doesn't have to just die.
Yeah, they got rid of him very quickly, and I didn't like that.
For naming a character and making him this whole thing, I thought, because, I mean, he can die later on, sure. I'm not super invested, but I like the idea of using him to kind of expose what Jamie Foxx is up to. But we still think that he's working for Telios at this point.
Right, yeah.
I'm going to say Chelios at some point. I know it because of the fucking Crank movies.
My name is Jeff Chelios.
Thoughts so far?
Yeah, I'm in. It adds more weight.
I like it.
It adds more weight to the film.
Awesome.
As opposed to just, I need to get my daughter back, that cliched plot
right.
that we've seen 1,000 times.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
And you know, you get to play around with the ideas that he's doing what he thinks is right to protect her, but he also knows that having her be experimented on like he was isn't the best life. He's, you know, he's kind of like dealing with that aspect. So then the other thing I want to fix is, who is the villain?
Yes.
Good question.
Who are you thinking that should be the villain?
So I think we had a lot of superfluous characters within this, and I really like Big Beardy Bald Guy.
Okay.
So we're gonna he's the head of this op now. He's the big man on campus. He's initially at the beginning of the movie, we're gonna have him be one of the G-men with Jamie Foxx's character. Early in the days, we see like a flashback to when they worked together, and then Jamie Foxx didn't work his way up, whereas Bearded Guy did. I didn't even get the character's name.
Does he even have a name?
Oh no, it's Wallace. That's right, it's Wallace.
Wallace, are you serious?
Well, that's his last name.
Okay, new name time. New name time.
Sure.
Gunther. There you go.
Gunther. so he's going to function as not only the guy trying to cut the deal in the middle of the movie, but he'll also function as the final character on the Genesis ship. And the Genesis ship is the center of operations for the lab, but it's the one thing that Jamie Foxx doesn't know where it is. They specifically kept that information from him. He's allowed to like Skype with his daughter and make sure that she's okay and stuff, but they know he's a loose cannon, literally, because he's got pistol shrimp powers, and they want to keep him in the dark as much as possible. So he's still trying to find the ship and where his daughter is, but now he's trying to do it as a double agent instead of just kidnapping people and shooting people and doing everything the hard way. The reason I wanted to make this change is because he has a line in the veterinarian's hospital where he says, you know, first of all, he says that she should join the army to fix her problems. I don't know if that was supposed to be taken as sarcastic. It only works sarcastically. But after that, he says that when you figure out that the system's out to get you, you have to figure out how to work the system against itself. And I really like that idea. However, that's not what he's doing. He's brute forcing it. Opposite of using the system against itself.
Right. Actually, I'm just looking at like pistol shrimp on Wikipedia right now. These are fucking horrifying, dude. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, they produce sonoluminescence from a collapsing cavitation bubble. As it collapses, the cavitation bubble reaches temperatures of 8,000 Kelvin? Are you fucking kidding me?
Wow.
What? These things are fucking monsters.
Dude, the ocean is full of aliens, and you cannot convince me otherwise.
Jesus Christ. Okay, I see why they picked this thing.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
So basically, this is changing Act 1 and Act 2. Act 3, instead of... I want to keep the meetup with the South American cartel or government person unclear. I want to keep that scene because I like the execution there. And then I want the result of that scene to be a little more Lethal Weapon and a little less getting arrested and then teaming up in the car. Because I just thought that was a weird character switch. Even just in the writing, Frank goes from like sarcastic asshole to what do you need? Just like that quick.
Yeah.
No need for that. If he walks in on a den of superpowered people and the one guy that survived is there trying to take people out. The difference in that scene, however, would be that Gunther would activate his powers and escape instead of explode. So now we have this, like, you know, this pin drop moment where we see that he's going to be booking it back to the ship because he knows that Jamie Foxx doesn't know where the ship is. That's kind of his safe spot. So all is lost. We don't know what's going to happen. Then we find out that Robin left and followed him. She doesn't run into the building because she doesn't do anything in that building. She does follow the guy eventually. So instead of her seeing him through the crowd while they're arresting people, she just follows him right out the gate. She jumps on Casey Neistat's bike and she books it with him. So when she finds the ship, she calls into them. The rest of the movie proper can happen. Also, Jamie Foxx doesn't need to get taken at the end because now he's, you know, actually part of the Telios system, so he can just kind of be part of the infiltration team and split off when he sees Tracy. Maybe he even has, like, you know, one of those like moments where he sees her on the screen and he just bolts. He abandons the plan just because he hasn't seen her in so long, or, you know, whatever contrivance you want for that aspect. But the end of the movie can kind of play out as it did, maybe trim up a few little things here and there, but the actual finale I'm very fine with. I have not a lot to change there.
I mean, if you're going to use the pistol shrimp effect, that's probably the best end you're going to get.
Exactly. Exactly. The only thing I would change about that sequence, specifically the pistol shrimp thing, is Robin needs to dive off the side of the ship because that shockwave was killing everything but her.
I noticed that. Like, how is it that the hell does she survive?
I didn't quite understand that, so yeah.
I expected afterwards that they were going to mention something like her mother took it while she was pregnant with her or something like that.
They never reveal what her power would be.
No.
Yeah.
That's for the sequel.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. Here's a funny joke. Her power is super speed, and so therefore when she takes it, she can rap super fast like Eminem.
Oh, that'd be kind of awesome.
There you go. Her brain finally can keep up with her mouth. There you go.
Right. Yeah.
Just an idea.
Perfect. I'm so here for it. What's one of the fastest thinking animals out there? And just that's it.
Well, I was just thinking
squirrel.
Like maybe a. Well, I was just thinking maybe a cheetah for like the speed in general, because she could have like a whole assortment of cheetah related powers that would be badass as hell.
And then she could wish to be even more like a alpha predator, like in Wonder Woman 1984.
The fastest animal in the world is the peregrine falcon.
Ah.
Ooh,
can reach speeds of 55 miles an hour.
That's like direct flight, though. They're the ones that do the dive.
They dive at like 200 miles
an
hour.
Yeah, they do the dive bombs.
Smartest animal on the planet is the dolphin, though.
Ah.
Because they can communicate with, you know, human beings. So
they get high off of pufferfish too. It's awesome.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
That is like my favorite thing about dolphins.
Have you heard the experiment where they tried to have a dolphin in a house with a woman for like a month on end, and eventually the woman had to start giving the dolphin to masturbate the dolphin?
Yeah,
I'm not shocked.
Do you know what else they were doing in that house?
What?
They were giving the dolphins mushrooms to see if they could learn how to speak like parrots. It was like the most unsanctioned anti-PETA, anti-FDA, like the science of that experiment is like the loosest air quotes that you could possibly have.
For real.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. Imagine feeding dolphins mushrooms and then jerking them off to keep them happy.
Oh, what a bizarre world we live in.
And then saying that's my job.
When you masturbate a male dolphin, its dick comes out like a hook, and if you wrap your arm around it, it'll take you for a ride.
You know, realistically, I've spent the large majority of my life sacrificing my sanity and my physical being for corporations, so masturbating a dolphin, fuck it. You know what? If it pays well, sign me up. When do I start? Next week? Okay, cool.
I mean, you get to be in the water
all
day.
It's no less demeaning than other shit I've done. It's no less demeaning than working in fast food. Fuck's sake. People treat you like shit.
That whole thing was insane. They built this house that went down into the water so the dolphins could swim into the first floor and hang out in the house with them.
Oh my god.
Have you guys ever seen Sequest DSV?
I've seen it.
Okay, it was a very defining TV show of my childhood. It was basically Star Trek, but on a boat, a submarine to be clear, and they had a fucking talking dolphin and it was amazing. But not a fucking talking dolphin. It was just a non-fucking dolphin. I feel the need to clarify based on the previous conversation. There was no dolphin sex on the TV show, just Lucas Walenchek and his sexiness and Catherine Hitchcock and her sexiness.
Interesting. I had
Roy Scheider on it too, so there you go.
Oh god, yes, he was so good on that.
What was the obsession in the 80s and 90s with Flipper and dolphin things? And what was that Sega Genesis game? Was it Echo?
Dolphin? Oh yeah.
Yes, and fucking Lisa Frank binders with dolphins that were rainbow hued.
Oh yeah.
Oh, dolphins were like the unicorn of my childhood. Or the narwhal, like they were the trendy animal for a while. Because I was cool and I liked orcas instead.
Don't you get abducted by aliens later in the game in Echo?
I don't know, because I suck at that game. And could never get very far in it.
I don't know. The game was too goddamn hard. I never finished it.
The game, the game right. was very difficult. I've since gone back and played a lot of those old Genesis and Super Nintendo games.
And you're like, how did I do this as a child? Especially the fucking Lion King game.
Oh, no, no. I'm saying now that there's like the internet and I can look up how to do things and I can actually do it.
Oh, my God.
It's so satisfying.
See, I find that, like, I played the Lion King game on Sega Genesis when I was a kid, and that's a notoriously very difficult game that does not have any saves or checkpoints or anything like that. You die, you're fucked.
I beat it.
And as a kid, yeah, as a kid, I used to be able to get pretty far in it. I did not beat it, but I used to be able to get pretty far. As a as an adult, I can't get through the first level.
Beating Contra 3 is like should be in my resume. I got to the final boss of Contra 3.
No, beating just Contra should be in your resume.
True.
Without Konami code.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No no Konami code. We're very off topic from Power.
Yeah, let's get, we were talking about masturbating dolphins. Now let's get back to
it. Fuck.
Yeah, so recollecting my thoughts. Yeah, inside job. It's Men in Black meets the X-Men now. And also, you maybe the last additive is really that... they aren't just helping Tracy. They find a bunch of these kids that are being experimented on as they're being found in the bottom of the ship. So we end the movie with a group of people that know what their powers are and can go under the tutelage of Jamie Foxx, who was in the original experiments with the military back in the day. I do want to keep that. I like that idea a lot.
So he becomes Professor X?
He's basically Professor X, except for...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Can we change him then to Idris Elba? Because that's kind of required.
You know...
It's been requested that Idris Elba play the new Professor X and the new Magneto should be Denzel Washington.
I'm not opposed to that, especially if they're doing retellings where... The characters are set like now, because like I love Magneto's backstory, you know, growing up where he did and what all he went through. That is like a pretty specific, you know, Jewish heritage thing. But I'm very fine with, you know, adapting that for the like, you know, 2020s. And
it needs an update.
Yeah, 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 for sure. Yeah, my final thing that I'd like to end on is. Like I said, the sequel idea to this would focus a little more on Frank going on a, you know, kind of heisty adventure with power pills. What kind of movie would you guys like to see have the power pill added to help the plot? Let's assume any sequel to Project Power can be like any genre that you want.
Ooh. Ooh. I say there's some really interesting science fiction potential.
Oh, yeah.
Like, decades down the road after everybody's been taking the pill for so long, and the kids now are born with these powers, mm-hmm. and what happens when they interbreed, like, what happens when Shark Girl has sex with Dolphin Boy, like, what are their children like?
Okay. Okay, so you know, a world affected by Project Power,
yeah.
Because of its, you know, visual coding as like a drug, I would love to see like a stoner comedy with from Project Power.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they take their pills and they just do some really stupid shit.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Hmm. Oh, I got it. I got what was that Linklater film? Dazed and Confused.
Oh,
there you go.
That'd be fun.
Dazed and Confused with powers.
Dazed and Powerful.
There you go.
See, I feel like a lot of times you have a couple of different genres.
No, I got Blazed and Powerful.
Ah.
I have
a couple
puns.
Of different classical genres of like drug films. There's like the stoner comedy, and then there's like the American Psycho, like cocaine businessman, Wolf of Wall Street kind of
Ooh,
thing.
Yeah.
And then there's Breaking Bad. Like, I want to see the people that just casually use drugs to get through the day, but have, like, otherwise fairly normal jobs. Like, I just want to see Joe the accountant who just needs this fucking pill to get through this 6 p.m. Zoom meeting with his boss.
Or construction workers, like older guys, can't do the job anymore, so they take like superhuman strength pills in order to keep them strong so they can do the job.
Right.
There you go.
Or like parents winning extra energy or abilities to help out with their kids' stuff. And like there's just a lot of instances where I feel like there's a lot of instances where normal people use these things. It would be really interesting to explore, and it's not something you commonly see in cinema.
The only upgrade that I would like to see to this is selectable powers. If it wasn't based on DNA, but it was based on like whatever's within the pill, you know, because then like the price of the power to be strong would be, you know, maybe a little more expensive than steroids, but the power for, you know, the price of the pistol shrimp power is like millions of dollars and it's only used in war.
Yeah. Or the different pills have different side effects or something like that.
Yeah.
They can backfire on you. There's, in Valiant, there is a group called Hardcore. And basically they have these surgical implants on their brains that allow you to download different powers. So you just hit a button and immediately it activates like a small nuclear reactor next to your brain. And it basically gives you whatever power you ask for. Like I asked for flights or I asked for super strength, but the problem is it emits radiation into your brain. So all the hardcore members only have a shelf life of about 2 years.
Oh my God.
So, but the thing is the company that makes it, they give you like, you get a massive paycheck, like $1 million a month. Also, your family and your next generation of your family will be completely taken care of contractually.
Mm.
So it's beneficial. Like, yeah, you're going to die in 2 years, but your family's going to be set for a long, long time.
Yeah. Well, imagine offering that to people that like otherwise only have about that much time. And it's like, well, we can put this in you and you can download the power to heal yourself. However, it's not actually extending your lifetime. It's just giving you this opportunity. That could be, it kind of sounds like Benevolent Suicide Squad.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
I'd watch that. That sounds the politics behind that would be really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could you imagine if like time distortion was one of the powers, ooh, and like people taking a pill just to live a little bit longer in a moment?
Mm, yeah. I mean, really good weed will do that.
Yeah, I know. Right?
Well, there was in the Watchmen TV show. There's the nostalgia.
Yeah, yeah.
The pills that let you view memories and live within memories.
Yep.
Yeah.
What if there was a pill that lets you go back and revisit memories? Like that's the power of the of that pill.
Oh, that's one of the coolest parts in Cyberpunk, I'm not gonna lie.
I still haven't played it.
The
I'll play it when it's not fucking broken.
There's a big patch that just came out, so there's a lot of stuff getting fixed.
I haven't had a single glitch in the last like 2 weeks. It's very, very functional now.
Once I get a PS5, I'll get it.
There you go. Yeah, but the everyone, because they all have eye implants, everything's being recorded at all times, and you can steal people's memories of things, and the computer AI like extrapolates it out into a scene. It's very similar to the detective mode in the Batman Arkham games.
I was just thinking detective mode in Arkham.
Yep, it's almost literally the same thing.
I was just thinking that thing that you stick your head in that's in Dumbledore's office.
Oh, the cool. Pevensey?
I don't know Harry Potter, Aaron. You gotta clarify that.
No, fucking don't remember.
Yeah, it's called like the Pevens or something. It's like it's basically a magic sink that you.
Is that with the weird worm thing?
Yes.
In the little bowl.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Why did that look like semen?
Well,
You know, fuck any. Why does any of this stuff a pensive?
Pensive. There you go. There you go.
How do you pronounce it?
Pevensey is the name of the kids that go to Narnia.
I thought there was something about that. I'm like, that's something, but it's not the right thing.
Right.
Where are you from? Fucking Narnia.
Well, that's all the fixes that I had for Project Power. Not a ton that you would have to change, just a little little shifts here and there that can still get you to the same end point. I didn't want to, you know, do a page one rewrite or anything like that on it.
The groundwork is there.
100%.
It's just fix a few small things and you've got it. Like, the structure is there. Trim it a little bit. Fix some of the characters and you're good.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah, it's a B movie. It's you know, but it's not a bad movie. It's a B movie.
Right. For anyone,
you know what you're expecting when you go into it. It's not bad.
Yeah. Where would you guys rank this with, like, other Netflix, like specifically Netflix films? A Beast with No Nation is obviously like the best one.
Yeah, this is mid-tier.
Mid-tier?
Yeah, this is mid-tier. I mean, you have things like this, but then you also have a movie like The Wheelman. Have you seen The Wheelman yet?
No, I haven't. You recommended that to me. I need to watch it.
Yeah, it's Frank Grillo plays a wheelman for a getaway driver. Basically, if the entirety of the first act of Drive was the whole movie, that's the entire movie.
Interesting.
And it all takes place inside one car.
It sounds like the director of Wheelman just watched Drive and was like, I get it, but this is boring now.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. Yeah, but it's great. That's making Drive on a budget.
Yeah.
It's genuinely good. Like, you have really good stuff on Netflix, like Beast of No Nation, or hell was it? What's the one that just came out? Queen's Gambit, which is basically an 8-hour film.
Yeah,
but then you also have a bunch of garbage like The Titan, that with fucking driving its Kennedy to the woodlands.
She's gonna fuck a mermaid man. And it's not The Shape of Water.
He makes it to Titan, though, in the last 30 seconds, and it's so awesome.
Good forever. What about you, Aaron? Where would you rate this on the Netflix scale?
It's definitely above The Kissing Booth.
Yeah? Yeah?
You know what? I don't watch a lot of Netflix shit. So
I kind of fall into the same thing. Like, I recognize that they put out tons of movies. I feel like I've seen more of the comedies they put out than any of the, like, more serious stuff. Yeah, this is a solid B minus for me. It's C plus depending on the scene.
It
never sinks below a C, and I just don't know if it ever rises above a B.
Not really, no. Joseph Gordon-Levitt tries really hard sometimes, and he does a real good job, but he can't carry a film on his own.
No, lies. Maybe you've seen The Lookout?
No.
He's great in Brick. He for as young as he was in that, too, he carries that
so
one.
Good.
The Lookout is fantastic. It was funny when he says to Robin, "Hey, you're the Lookout." And I thought, like, that was a nod to that movie. I was like,
yep.
Yeah, I get it.
I like it.
Yeah, The Lookout is genuinely good. He's a guy with short-term memory loss, and he is forced into being the lookout for a getaway crew doing a heist, and he ends up with the money by accident. And so he's like, maybe I should just try to take this for myself. So it's good. It's very good. It's also reuniting with him with Jeff Daniels. The hell was it? Looper.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's another movie, Looper. He can carry a movie. What the hell are you talking about, Aaron? He can carry a film.
If he has to.
Well, not a film with this kind of writing.
Yeah. When you say it like that, with this kind of writing, yeah.
He can't carry this film.
He
on
can't
his
carry
own
this film, yes. But he can Fair carry enough. A film.
Looper is a fucking phenomenal film that he is masterful in.
He elevates the writing in this one, absolutely.
Yes, because he's clearly given it his all.
Yeah. And I think that it feels to me like they let him play around a little bit scene to scene. I would be shocked if all of his lines were written exactly as he delivers or ad-libs them.
Yeah. I mean, where is he actually from?
Wasn't he...
Because he keeps saying, like, he loves New Orleans. Is he from New Orleans? No, he's from L.A.
Yeah, I was going to say, wasn't he an alien in that one TV show as a kid?
Yeah, he's a Hollywood family.
Third Rock from the Sun. Yeah, he comes from money.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've been in love with him since I was a child.
Oh, he's going to be Jiminy Cricket in the Guillermo del Toro Pinocchio.
Ooh, great. I'm very excited about that.
I don't know. I feel like those movies are like work for hire for a lot of people.
Yeah, but I like del Toro. So.
I know, but it just feels like they got him because, hey, you have a weird fucked up style. go ahead and do this. But then they put a leash on them. They don't let them go to full creative overdrive.
Right.
Like, compare the creativity of Crimson Peak and compare it to what he's going to do with Pinocchio. I guarantee it's nothing.
Crimson Peak is such a good movie.
It's not going to be comparable at all.
Yeah. That's unfortunate.
Hmm.
Well, I think this is a good spot to end this episode. If you're worried that we aren't going to trash movies in the future, I promise we will. We just, for your host's sake, we need a little injection of good movie from time to time.
Yes.
Do we have our next one set up yet? What's the next one we have to do?
I want to say that that's with the guy from Busted Limes that's not Paresh.
Nope, to be determined.
Okay. Okay, perfect, actually. We'll discuss that off air then. I think the next episode that we are doing will be Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief with Black Belt. Is the chap's name. That should be a good time. I actually have read the book as well, so that works out. It's a breezy read. Jesse, thank you so much for hosting with me today. Let the world know what you have going on out here in these streets.
In these streets. I'm so not from the streets. I am the whitest white person ever. Well, we have two other podcasts. We have Split the Difference, where we take original films, compare them to their remake. We just did Death Race. That was a lot of fun.
Yes.
And we have That Weird Ass Game, where we discuss weird, unusual games. That's coming back very, very soon. And if you want to get in touch with me, find me on Twitter at HardcoreBshot.
Wonderful. And Aaron, thank you as well for hosting with me today. Hi. Where can the world find you?
Well, you can find me on the Palate Cleanser podcast, where we discuss films that do not suck, films that we like and have a certain sort of nostalgia about. You can also find me many nights on Twitch, Aaron Moriarty there, and on Instagram and Twitter, I'm Aaron Moriarty YT. I'm very active on many social media fronts right now.
Wonderful. And the final thought is, if you'd like to support us and what we do, our Patreon is ever growing. We offer a $1 tier that gets you access to early releases of all of our episodes. Some of those will be extended as well. Sometimes we chop a little bit out before it goes live, but you could hear the full versions on our Patreon. We also have a Patreon-only show called So What Else, where we just kind of talk about what's new. I would love to jump in and do Snyder Cut and Godzilla vs. Kong soon. That would be a fun episode.
Hopefully in 2 weeks we'll be able to do that.
That'd be great. Yeah, so all of that's on our Patreon, patreon.com/Montressor Media. The links to that and our Discord are in the below, what do the Vlogbrothers call it? The blah-bitty-blah. Do you know what I mean, Aaron?
Oh my gosh, it's been a while since I've watched them.
I have literally no idea what the hell you're talking about.
Well, I love the Vlogbrothers, but it has been many years since I've watched
them. The Doobly-Doo, down in the Doobly-Doo, that's what they call it. the comment or description section, that's where all the links are. Somebody out there heard me say that and was just screaming at the podcast, it's the fucking Doobly-Doo! yeah, so you can...
People don't listen to the end of the ad block. Come on now. If you listen to the end of the ad block, tweet me. I'm very curious.
You should put a secret message in here that they can reference.
Yes. Pink Nipple Clan. I don't know. That's the first thing that came to mind.
I think that's the end of the episode now, Seth.
I agree. I think that's all of our plugs. Thank you so much for listening. I've been your Pitchmaster General, Seth. Good night.
Don't masturbate dolphins.